Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really amazing founder, a founder that has done it also a couple of times. You know, we're going to be talking about how it's like to start a company with your twin brother. Also transitioning from doing something the service space to then maybe like thinking about productizing it and launching a product, rolling something out of that is more repeatable and scalable. And then also about weathering the storm via the pandemic or raising money, you know, through different rounds. Again, the episode today is going to be packed with very inspiring stuff. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Zach Dunn. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alejandro. Happy to be here.
So originally born in Connecticut and then raised in Western Massachusetts, which is a very important distinction from Massachusetts. So tell us about growing up. How was life for you?
Like most folks, I spent a brief time in Connecticut, didn't actually stay there. And Western Massachusetts is, for those of you from Massachusetts, know the distinction. It's very rural. I had an alpaca farm in my hometown, and it was a very different experience than Boston, which is now where I've lived and worked for the last 12 years.
So how did you get into the whole thing of, let's say, design and development? Because that's, in the end, when you ended up studying.
Yeah. So my twin brother and I have, despite the odds, we've managed to do just about everything together over the last 35 years. You can't quite get the hint. It's the weirdest thing, you know? But we both went to University of Hartford down in Connecticut. I went for web design and development, which was basically graphic design meets computer science. And then he went for marketing. And so as a result of that, we figured out that, hey, there's maybe some work we could do there together. And while we were down studying there, we started what would later become one of the top 10 blogs on the internet for web design and development called Built Internet. And through that, we were able to jump out of school and into the wonderful world of client services, agency work, right? You want a website? We'll make you a website.
And we'll talk about that in just a little, I guess, with your twin brother, because as you were alluding to it, you know, you guys do everything together. How do you guys complement each other?
So I am what people would call the rational one now. So he and I have learned how to work together, obviously, over the years. I would say he is probably the big picture guy, and I am more the how, the execution side of it. And that ends up working very well. And those that we've been fortunate to work with over the years have learned that distinction, sometimes trial by fire, but we've been able to balance each other.
So that's pretty cool, actually. You know, I think I mentioned that I have twin girls too. So it's amazing to see what it could look like in the future. Now, in your guys' case, you know, you were in university and eventually you design, I mean, you build up this blog that started to get quite a bit of attention, and that the way that you thought about monetizing it was via the service-based type of approach. So I guess, how big did the blog get and what was that the thought process of, hey, how do we make money from this?
So we lucked out on timing in a big way because this was right around the cusp of social media really becoming a thing. So this was probably within the first couple years of Twitter and also back in the day. I don't know. Do you remember when Facebook had like Farmville in a tab?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The golden age, right?
Yeah.
So on the blog, a lot of the work that we were doing was writing tutorials on how to get into some of that sort of design. And we would have people reach out to us and say, hey, that thing that you talked about, can you do that for our company? And that was a new idea to us. But we were able to turn that into a handful of first $1,500 clients, $3,000 clients. And then I think it grew from there to 30, 50K projects. And so at a certain point, I think our senior year of college, we were like, I'm pretty sure we can employ ourselves now. So let's just do this full time.
So how do you land into the, let's say, service-based agency type of work?
Yeah. So at the time, that was pretty big, where there were a handful of so-called digital agencies out there that were really helping shape a lot of the consumer brands out there, for example, how they should use social for the first time, because nobody had really figured it out. What is a Twitter account actually for a business? And so one of the niches that we fell into was helping these brands build in-person digital experiences for their events. So an example of that would be if you go to a music festival and they would give you like RFID wristbands as the ticket. We made things that when you walked up to kiosks, tagged that in, things around you would change. Like the screen could change to something. It would take a photo, send it to you, that sort of stuff. Gimmicky in retrospect. But at the time, that was like a goddamn revolution, right? Like, cool. And so we were able to build some interest and visibility through that.
So then eventually you go into productizing, right? So you guys are, you know, doing this whole agency thing, but that doesn't scale. You have certain amount of hours in the day. And I'm sure that at one point you were like, hey, maybe we can do something where we can make money when we sleep.
The dream. One of the things that I think you learn in a hurry if you've done the services business is it's hard because a lot of your work is temporary. That is to say, like, your portfolio is only as good as the last 2 to 3 things that you've done. And a lot of the earliest stuff that you've done is no longer anywhere on the internet. And you're constantly in a state of finding your next thing. And sometimes you get long-term customers, but more often than not, you're constantly hunting. And so while we were working with these clients, we started to build stuff that we could reuse across clients. And that ultimately led us to what would later in 2014 spin off into our first venture-backed company, Robin. Robin came out of an idea that we had a conference room table in our conference room, which we made it so that when you sat down at it, it booked the room. Using like motion sensors and other stuff. And this was like just a fun thing that we had built using some of the tech that we were developing. And that it went viral at the time. And we were invited to go present it at Neocon, which despite the name is actually a furniture and architecture and design conference in Chicago. And that was really the first time where we were able to like springboard this idea of client work into, oh, maybe this is a product. And so Robin was from 2014 on, basically whenever you see an iPad outside of a conference room, that was probably us. If not, we would fix it and become the one who did it. And that really, over the next 10 years, it became a full body workplace scheduling system.
So I guess, how were you guys making money there for the people listening to get it?
Yeah. So a lot of the times in the early days, what people would come to us for is a problem of like, hey, you have an office, you have dozens, if not hundreds of conference rooms. How do you make sure that you're able to book the right rooms, cancel meetings if people don't show up to them? Everyone hates it when you show up to when you can't find a conference room and they're booked and there's nobody in there. So there's a lot of that sort of air traffic control that we were able to do. And over the years, that evolved into supporting a thing called activity-based work, which is a way of designing your office to support the type of work that you're doing instead of just the number of people. So like you might have an area that's for brainstorming breakout space. You might have another area that's for different types of work. And when you do that sort of thing, it has a profound impact on how you actually have to schedule and coordinate everybody. So
how was that moment like as well when you guys decide, hey, maybe we got to scale this thing faster. Maybe we should take a look at the raising money.
Yeah. So it was probably one of the best / worst years of my life. The year that we decided to raise the seed round, which ultimately ended up being around $3 million or so. And one of the things that we decided was, hey, we're going to start trying to fund this ourselves, because that was just in our DNA. And we had a little bit of a war chest from the agency that we had started. And so we were like, okay, we have people that are very good. We have an idea. There's some interest. Let's see how far we can get this thing on our own. And we put in the first million probably out of that funding. And what we quickly realized is it's just a different beast when you're building a product. And a lot of the growth that you want to have happen really comes from being able to not just identify the opportunities, but also act on them. And I think identifying opportunities is often the sexy, easy part, but actually acting on them, seizing them, a lot of times that's where the constraint comes in. And, you know, when you only have about a dozen people, you got to move a little bit faster than just bootstrapping it allows. So we decided to go out fundraise.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com, and we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So how was the journey of raising money? Because all in all, you guys raised about $60 million. So that was four different rounds. Yeah, so during those different four rounds, what did you see changing and shifting when it came to strategies or expectations to be effective and to get it to happen?
I'll go round by round. So with the seed round, a lot of it was around Sam, my twin brother, and I's ability to actually navigate the transition from a services business to product. Because one of the things that we weren't expecting as we were going out fundraising was how little interest people had in our backgrounds. It almost was like a black mark, so to speak, because, you know, we had a number of VCs where we would seemingly have a great conversation. But at the end of the day, what it came down to for them was like, there's two types of people in the world, people who do services business, people who do product business. When you choose one, you can't go to the other. And I don't believe that, still don't. But that was, I think, a pattern that had emerged in the fundraising environment at the time, around 2014. And so a lot of it was convincing folks that we could actually build a product and not just a services client relationship. And we were able to find a handful of folks that fortunately believed in that and us, and go from there.
Okay. And then what would you say was the toughest thing or the biggest lesson that you got from capital raising?
It's important to balance the aspiration that you have, like where it could go, with short-term goals even. Because like it's really easy to look from the outside, I think, with a venture and think, okay, the type of people who get founded in, or get funded in tech, are the people who go into a room and are, you know, like there's this amazing opportunity and here it is and let's do this. And you can get people excited about an idea and that's enough. But the fact of the matter is most of the people that you're meeting with, they are partners or in the firms and they are only funding maybe like 3-4 companies a year, conservatively, sometimes more in earlier stage. But really, the question that you're not just competing against other people trying to do the product you're trying to build, you basically got to convince the person you're talking to, is this worth one of my 4 or 5 for the year? And so in that way, you're competing against anything that could raise money. And that was not something that we really fully appreciated until maybe midway through the process. Because there's a lot of folks who would, with unlimited budget, sure, invest, but that's not the criteria. It has to be, you know, of all of the ones I'm likely to see this year, is this one that I'm into?
I know as well that the COVID period was a little bit rough when it came to scaling and pushing Robin. So with Robin going through the pandemic, you know, after you guys had raised this money and everything, how was that like for you guys? I mean, that sounds like a crazy, you know, murky waters to go through.
I definitely wouldn't recommend selling office software during a pandemic, especially when offices are closed. Not so fun, at least, you know, compared to other things. So we had, for some context, right before the pandemic, we had just closed a Series B. I believe that was about 20 million. So at the time, we had basically closed 30 million across the first few rounds. And so we were really ramping up and starting to develop our second product line. So the first one being conference rooms. And then the second one, we were getting into hot desking, hoteling. That's like where you can book desks instead of just rooms, right? So you don't have assigned seats in an office. And that was early days, and we knew that it would be probably a couple years before that really took hold, but we were making the investment. And then the pandemic happened, and at first it was awful because 100% of our customers were not able to actually use the product that they had purchased from us. But as more people started shifting into the how do you return to the office, that actually became a major driver for us. And we saw over that time period, we grew 3 to 4 times over. And what we thought would be multiple years ended up happening in a matter of like 6 to 12 months as far as growth goes. Because that hot desking solution, like desk booking thing, turns out that actually was a pretty critical thing for returning to the office. So it ended up being a fascinating turn of events.
Love it. So then for you guys, you know, at what point does it become evident that maybe it's time to shift gears and turn page and get going with something new, which would end up becoming Rally?
Yeah. So we did Robin for about 10 years. It's still going and, you know, attend the board meetings, love it. And really continuing to see that move forward. But about a year or so ago, we started another company and decided, hey, this is a good opportunity to take some of what we learned with our time at Robin and start another company, Rally, which now targets some of the storytelling and team communication around product marketing and like how people actually announce and present product-related demos, updates to their customers, those sorts of things. It was a direct pain point felt at Robin, and it was one that I think we had a perspective on that we could bring. So that's where we're now.
So Rally, what's the business model there?
So, you know, typical SaaS until it isn't, right? Of course, I feel like the right answer at this point is everything has to be AI, right? You know, otherwise, what are you doing? The business model is basically per seat with a secondary business model of AI credits. That part's in the works still. But the gist is we sell into go-to-market teams. So think people who are on the front lines talking to customers, prospects, and the people who support them. So think product marketing, sales enablement. And the motion here is actually unsurprisingly very different than selling workplace scheduling software, where you're talking to facilities and IT teams. Here, you're actually talking to people whose job it is to explain and present the product to not just prospects, but also an existing and growing customer base. And a large part of that has to do with, is the product that you have actually the product that you're selling and the product that your customers know you have? And it turns out that there's a pretty big lag in building the product versus letting people actually experience the most cutting edge version of the product that you have. And that's what we're trying to close.
Was it a little bit easier to raise money this time around or no?
I think that for a second time around founder, there's certain credit that I think you can, in goodwill, that you're able to leverage, especially with the early days. So I think it was much more of a which folks do we want to work with again conversation. And, you know, fortunately, we're able to pull together almost exclusively previous investors from Robin. And then we involved, you know, typical angels. And, you know, it was, all things considered, very smooth. And, you know, in some ways, that's a relief. But, you know, for those of you out there who have done it one time around and you're worried about round two, if you've had a decent outcome, it's a very different experience the second time through.
That's amazing. Obviously, investors, they bet on a vision. So when it comes to a vision, if you were to go to sleep tonight and you wake up in a world where the vision of Rally is fully realized, what does that world look like?
I think that the experience that a customer has in learning about your product, using your product, it's consistent from start to finish. Like the way that your sales team talks about the product and presents your product is the same as the way your customer team is able to present your product. There's this real challenge with the product that you have is not often the product that your customers think you have. And the better that we can do at helping people present and display their latest product updates, the more we can help people get that feedback loop needed to build a great product faster, which is, if you think about some of that AI coding stuff, the rate of change is going to go up. And so it's not really practical to expect that it's going to take 3 to 6 months once you ship a feature for your customer base to actually realize that it's there.
So we're talking about the future here. I want to talk about the past, but doing so with a lens of reflection. Mm-hmm. If I was to put you into a time machine and I bring you back, you know, let's say to around 2011, where you and your brother were, you know, starting to play with having a blog and, you know, maybe think about a world where you could do something of your own. And if you could go back in time and have a sit down with your younger self and your brother too, and you were able to give your younger selves one piece of advice before launching a company, what would that be and why, given what you know now?
I think first of all, if I had a time machine and specifically for 2011, I would buy as much Bitcoin as possible and just get that out of the way. But, you know, once I've made the correct financial decision there, when you're going through this for the first time, it's really easy to over-index for people who have to hire people who have skills that you don't. And when you're hiring somebody for the first time who has financial accounting background or operations, everything that they do will feel like magic. Like, oh my gosh, I had no idea how the Microsoft Excel worked that way. And so you can end up hiring people that may not be that may be better than you, but may not be the best pick for the stage. And this is, I think, over the years, being able to hire people who know how to do things that you don't, but also able to have that lasting impact over a number of years and scale with the company. That's a process to learn. And I think that's where a lot of the wisdom I would share is. Also, ad revenue is probably not a good source of income. That was mostly how we funded the blog days early on. And there's some, you know, banner ads or you know, a few thousand dollars a month at the time, which was college years. Oh, amazing. But, you know, there's some other opportunities too.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, hey, it's a trial and error like everything in life. Eh, Zach?
Life is risk. Yes.
That's right. That's right. So, really amazing. You know, I got to really thank you on behalf of everyone that is listening. Also on my end, you know, for really taking the time to come on to the Dealmaker Show today and share your super inspiring journey, Zach. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Alejandro.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening and see you at the next episode.